He was never taught to keep his opinions to himself. That's why we love him. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
An ending fitting for the start. You twist and tore our love apart. Your life fingers through the dark. Shattered the lamp into darkness.
All right, we're back. Had a little nap during the break. Lay down on the floor. Back feels good. I think I need a lifestyle adjustment. I don't know if you can have that happen at 54. The Bruins and the Leafs will meet Saturday. Hockey Night in Canada, Air Canada Center. Lyndon Byers, former Bruins forward. And co-host of the Hillman Morning Show on WAAF 97.7 and 107.3 in Boston joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mr. Byers, how are you? How was the wedding?
The wedding was phenomenal. I A-listed it, nailed it, laser show. The husband and wife, Mr. and Mrs. Mike and Don DeLuca, are happily married on their honeymoon. He's a veteran and a local cop, and that makes me I would just like to say, my thoughts and prayers are with everybody up there in the Ottawa area. That was a tough one this week for everybody, and I just stay tough and fight the good fight.
People in Boston. Yeah, people in Boston know about that.
Except for my Bruins.
Yeah, well. I got to ask you, Lyndon, because I know there are actually people out there, in Boston I understand there's been some sort of discourse about, well, do the Bruins really need Zdeno Chara, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to find out in the next 4 to 6 weeks, aren't they, just how important this guy is?
Well, I think a lot of people think Zdeno Chara is overrated because they can't understand why someone 6'9", 260 pounds, doesn't run people through the glass, and how does and he's not more physical. And I just say to them, you're ridiculous. You watch how this guy plays. This would be, it's like the Patriots losing Tom Brady. It's like your number one pitcher going down with the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. It's like this guy does so much just being on the ice. He makes everyone else's life so much easier. And to be honest, Jeff, the Bruins are playing ridiculously bad defensive mm-hmm. hockey. They're not taking away time and space. Their guys are sneaking in behind D. I mean, last night in that Islanders game again, the second Islander goal, how does Barkowski lose a guy behind the net? And then he comes out, stands in front of it, and screens Svedberg. I mean, that game should have been 10-2 because Svedberg played out of his mind. So, it's a wake-up call for the Boston Bruins. And again, it's one of those things. As a professional hockey team, as a professional athlete, you got to look for someone to step up. I would hazard a guess. Joe Moore is going to be might be the guy that's going to get called up. Otherwise, Barkowski, Torrey Krug, Dougie Hamilton, Adam McQuaid, and Dennis Seidenberg are all going to have to pick up their game. And, it's tough with Sides because he's coming back off that injury. And, that type of injury is going to, he's not going to be right till mm-hmm. till probably Christmas. So, the Bruins are in a tough, the Bruins and the Leafs are with the have-nots. And anybody that doesn't think that, the games and points at the beginning of the season mean nothing, it's ridiculous, because when it comes to the end of the season and you're 2 points out of a playoff spot, or you're 2 points out of being a top half of the playoff group, then it gets really important. So every game means so much these days in the NHL.
Lyndon Byers joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. The obvious thing, people are immediately, Lyndon, going to say, okay, well, this guy's got to step up. This guy's got to step up. But Gord Stellick and I were talking earlier in the show, and I was making the point that you have your shutdown defensemen. You have your shutdown lines. You have your shutdown centers. Zdeno Chara is a shutdown player. I mean, he and I don't, you might, obviously you're going to have to redistribute his minutes. but you're not going to get whoever gets those minutes, unless Dougie Hamilton grows another, I don't know, 5.5 inches or whatever. unless you get those minutes, or unless you can replace those minutes, but you can't replace Zdeno Chara minutes, can you?
No, you can't. And it's ridiculous to think you can't. There's a lot that has to happen to the Bruins right now, Jeff, for them to be playing as well as the upper echelon teams. I mean, you watch Detroit and Pitt, the Detroit comeback last night. All their upper echelon players were a part of all the comeback goals and the winning goal.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the Boston Bruins last night against the Islanders, and that line of Marchand, Bergeron, and Riley are awful. You know, you're talking about Patrice Bergeron, bar none the best two-way player in the game, two Selke trophies. The guy plays defense better than everybody. That line has to pick it up. There's not a team in the NHL that if your top two lines aren't playing to their capability or above their capability, you're out. You're out of the playoffs. And Thanksgiving comes fast. I mean, that basically is the recipe for NHL playoff hockey, is that if you're in the top eight after Thanksgiving, you're going to be in the top eight at the end of the year. And if you're not, it's almost, 90% chance that you're not in the playoffs. So what's going on with the Bruins and the Leafs right now? Guys got to pick it up, and it starts with your superstars. And if your superstars aren't committed to playing defense, aren't committed to playing team hockey, we all, you know and I know how good Kessel can be offensively,
mm-hmm.
You know how good that top line can be offensively. If you're not, if JBR is not willing to put the work in and get his nose dirty in the defensive end, close space, take pucks away, take the body, so that you get some, a turnover and the Leafs send you the other way. You know, Dion Phaneuf, the older guys, you can't get beat one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you have to set the tone. You set the tone, the young guys follow you, they feel obligated. It's kind of a snowball effect. And what's going on with the Leafs and the Bruins right now is they're not playing good. You know, they're not playing good hockey, and it all starts with defense in the NHL in 2014.
Lyndon, at what point, or do you think there is a point where the Bruins take a look at their situation and, they are getting a little older. They already had payroll issues with that necessitated the move of Johnny Boychuk, that they take
right.
a look at this year and they, not that they throw it away, but that they say, you know what, maybe we should start making a couple of moves to get a little younger. I don't know if that's possible. But do you think that there is a chance this year, if this season doesn't go well for the Bruins and they find themselves, I don't know, 7th, 8th, 9th, that they may end up looking at this and if not blowing the thing up, I don't think you blow it up in the NHL, but at least looking at maybe trying to offload some guys and get a little younger and frankly maybe get a little more talented too?
Yeah, you called it, Jeff. That's exactly what's going to happen with this team. Peter Chiarelli has said they're not done. Cam Neely was on our show earlier this week, and he stated that fact in itself is that they have a core of guys that they went all in with. This group last year they went all in by going out and getting a Ginla, and they spent the dough to win a Stanley Cup, and they didn't get there. They paid the price, and the price was Johnny Boychuk. And boy, would it be nice to have him in a Bruins jersey now. The Dano's down, but you can never predict injuries, and if that's not here nor there, I won't whine about it. But the Boston Bruins are not done trading. They're not done building this team. They know they have to work the cap, and they're going to do it. I definitely agree that this group of guys won't be the same group of guys come playoff time. And again, I'm not panicking. I totally believe the Boston Bruins are a playoff hockey team. Patrice Bergeron, that line will not, play terrible for a massive stretch, 30 or 40 days. So, my faith is that Patrice knows what he's got to do to be better, and they'll get there. But this team won't look the same come playoff time.
Well, and, Lyndon, my sense in the East is that you might be able to have your cake and eat it too here. You might be able to retool or rework yourself and still make the playoffs. That doesn't mean you're going to go on a run and win the Stanley Cup, but you still might be able to make some moves and still get in the playoffs and at least give your ownership, at least give them that bonus money of the playoffs. Series.
Yeah, no, Jeff, it's like this, being a former player, and I know, the world we live in, back when I played, The goal was to win a Stanley Cup. But first and foremost, to even try to go for a Stanley Cup, you have to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You have to be in the best position you can be in the playoffs. So that's a goal. We live in the world we live in now with Twitter and social media. It's down to the point that, you know, with fantasy and everything else, people are so involved that it wasn't what have you done for me lately or what have you done for me last week. It's like, what have you done for me last shift? it's a wild time. You got to build your team. You got to get there. And I think the Bruins will do it, and they're going to have to retool and get her done. But it's a different world of sports that we live in right now. So you know, hang tough and you see what happens.
Lyndon, it's good of you to join us today. Thanks so much, my friend.
Jeff, you're the best, buddy. Have a great week. And again, all our thoughts down here are all about Ottawa and Canada and how great you people are and how tough you people are. And keep your heart strong. And the Barbarians will never win.
Lyndon, I appreciate the sentiment. Thanks so much. And, of course, folks in Boston have had more than their share of experience, unfortunately, with having to rebound from attacks on their own soil. And if you get a chance, take a look. We talked a bit about the Pittsburgh Penguins and the rendition of O Canada they played before their game against Philadelphia. On Wednesday, literally hours after the death of Corporal Nathan Cirillo. Take a look at what the Boston Bruins did last night as well, which was pretty cool. Bonus points, of course, for having Rene Rancourt do your anthem. So the sentiment from people in Boston, I think it's safe to say, we automatically just take it as being heartfelt, and we appreciate the words and thoughts of people from Boston. It's been like as I said at the start of the show, it's been kind of a difficult week to say the least. Just kind of off-putting, the right word, out of kilter. And last night, I don't know, I want to say about 8 o'clock, 8:30 last night, the news broke that Steve Nash would not be playing for the LA Lakers this year, a degenerative condition. That has been much whispered about. It hasn't even been whispered. People, I think, have started the Steve Nash retirement watch. I think people probably started that 2 years ago, maybe even before then. Jack McCallum has a new book out, Bleeding Orange, a book on Jim Boeheim, the Syracuse Orange head coach. He's also the author of 7 Seconds or Less. And Dream Team, 7 Seconds or Less, a look at the 2005-2006 Phoenix Suns that he followed around for the year. And it's one of those, I'm a big fan of detail-oriented writing, of picking a topic, a team for a year, and writing the living hell out of it. That's exactly what Jack McCallum did in 7 Seconds or Less, and he joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Jack, thanks so much for doing this.
No problem. How you doing?
Doing well. Let me ask you this. Personal level, what did you think of Steve Nash spending time around that team?
Well, I respected, first of all, I respected Steve's work ethic. I began the book, not to make this a thing about the book, although it still is available at Amazon.com.
Hey, I'm an author. There's no problem with that. Make the plug. I'm all about plugs.
There you go. I began it with an examination of Steve's work ethic. I mean, I guess that's, you know, a cliche, but that's sort of what I admired the most. I was there during his second MVP season, during which he needed, his guy, his magic guy with the magic hands,
right,
down from Canada to work on him. So I saw what he went through to be Steve Nash. And this is 8 years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when he was a relatively young man and was, in fact, in the prime of his career and was, in fact, you know, the best point guard in the game. So that's the number one thing that I remember about Steve. There was kind of an air of mystery about him. I mean, I knew him. You know, I hung around that team the entire season. But frankly, there were guys I got to know better than Steve. There was always you know, kind of a little bit of a hand distance that kept from everyone. And I respected that. I don't know whether that's what he needed, because I remember one of the things I remember the most was being back in the locker room, and Steve is preparing for his second MVP conference. He's back there alone. He's got his suit on. He struck me. He looked like the student council president from a high school. And I just said to him, did you ever think the odds of somebody like you winning two straight MVP awards? You know, it's astonishing. That doesn't mean Steve wasn't a great athlete. We could go into that. But a normal-sized guy from Canada who went to not a big school, who started out as a reserve in the league, winning two straight MVP awards, that is just incalculable. I mean, that you just can't say what the odds are on that.
Jack McCallum joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. I made a comment at the start of my show that, I mean, I'm 54 years old. I've covered sports in Canada since 1981, and I made the point that in my generation, not even my generation, in my life, he being Steve Nash, was the most transformative Canadian athlete that I'd seen, because Wayne Gretzky was great, but hockey was going to be Canada's national sport, frankly, with or without Wayne Gretzky. That's the way it was going to be. If it wasn't Wayne Gretzky, it would have been somebody else. But Steve Nash, I think... Steve Nash, a little bit like Larry Walker in baseball, was a transformative figure. I think he showed Canadian kids, you know, whether in high school or younger kids, that there was an opportunity there to, you know, and it may have been a thin chance. I mean, the chance of making the NBA, if you're a kid growing up in the States, the chances of making the NBA are limited at best. But at least Steve Nash gave people, and Larry Walker in baseball to a certain degree, showed people that there was a way forward, that if you really wanted to apply yourself, you had to have a lot of things go your way, but you know, here's somebody who's done it. And I think in a lot of ways he may have almost invented Canadian basketball. What was your sense of him as a Canadian? Now, I know you said you didn't get a chance to get close to him, but did he talk about Canada? Did he, you know, was it obvious?
Sure, we always... when I say I didn't get close to him, I just mean, you know, every day I kind of like to get a Steve-ism. I used to go over there, and what we used to joke about mostly was Canada, and every time, you know, I mean, I would have a couple political discussions with him, and I would say, I would always go over and I go, Steve, you know, I was just talking to all the right-wingers on the team, so let me get the Canadian view. Let me get the nice sensibility on it, because our politics were probably, you know, kind of close. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I always sort of got that from him. The other thing was soccer. I would just go over once in a while. I would say, you know, if they got rid of offsides, the American TV audience would like it a lot better. So Canada was a big part of it. I mean, I remember calling him the, you know, kind of the indie point guard. Mm-hmm. That was very, I mean, he didn't wear it on his sleeve. He didn't go around, you know, singing the Canadian national anthem. But there was a difference, a slight difference, which you got with any, you know, Boris Diaw was on that team. Boris's right. Frenchness came through just in the way he looked at diet and the different way he looked at the world than the American kids did. And Steve had that also. But I think what you said about, you know, a Canadian person identifying with him, that is absolutely true. At the same time, there's probably a million American kids who are 5'8" who didn't know Steve was Canadian and looked at him in the same way that kids a generation before looked at John Stockton. Hey, you know, I can do this.
Right.
You know, whether you can or not is another question. But, you know, he did give hope to a lot of kids, Canadian and anywhere in the world.
Jack McCallum joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. He is the author of 7 Seconds or Less, A Year with the Phoenix Suns in 2005-2006. His new book is Bleeding Orange, 50 Years of Blind Referees, Screaming Fans, Beasts of the East, and Syracuse Basketball, co-written with Syracuse Orange head coach Jim Boeheim. That is out on November 4th.
Steve, by the way, wanted to go to I kept telling Boeheim that Steve wanted to go to Syracuse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't. He told me that out of high school. And I said to Boeheim, I said, well, you missed on Nash. You go, well, you know, 150 other programs missed on Nash. So that's why he was at Santa Clara.
Well, and it's funny, Jack, because I did a book in the Blue Jays, and I talked to a couple of scouts and a couple of people with Baseball Canada, and I had no idea that actually Steve Nash was at a couple of tryout camps as well, sort of Canadian tryout camps run by Major League Baseball. And there were people, and I don't know if this is really well known, but I mean, there were people who wanted him to play baseball and thought he should give baseball a serious try. We know about his love for soccer, but and that kind of gets to the next point I wanted to make. Sometimes I think we look at, and I'm going to try to be tactful here, we look at a 5'8" white guy in the NBA playing well, and we say, my God, that guy's gritty and he's tenacious. And, you know, I mean, he's going up against those tough guys and they're all bigger than him and he's taking a pounding. Steve Nash was a pretty good natural athlete too, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. And he's not the same player. I used to talk about this with Larry Bird. I mean, obviously they're not the same type of guy. But Bird used to talk about Bird was looked upon. Well, he was big, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, couldn't jump. Didn't seem to be quick. But he had all of those gifts. I mean, Bird's, and the same with Steve. His quick twitch muscles, his hand-eye coordination, his agility, all of those things are in the top, 1% in the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't get what it was with Steve. Was, I think, ultimately, I don't think point guards have to jump. That wasn't really it. It was more that he never looked as quick as he did. I mean, as fast as they played, you know, he always was kind of a probing type of point guard.
Yep.
He never really, but he had a quick first step. He had a good crossover. And the thing about him was, you know, one of the things he'll go down with, he may be the best shooting point guard there ever was. I mean, so therefore, get up, you know, therefore you had to play him close, and,
right,
and he got around you. So you don't get to where guys like Steve Nash without being just an unbelievable natural athlete. It just doesn't happen.
What do you think Steve Nash, this is, most people are saying they think his career is over. Steve hasn't, I don't think he said anything about it yet, but what do you see Steve Nash doing once he decides that he's not going to play basketball anymore, that the NBA career is over? What do you see him doing maybe, I don't know, 6 years from now, 7 years from now? Will he still be in the public eye, or, will he be off, traveling around the world or going up to monasteries in Tibet? What do you think Steve, he's probably already done that, actually. What do you think Steve Nash will end up doing?
Well, I don't know whether it was because of his back that he saw the end coming, 8 or 9 years ago. I mean, he's a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
Or it was just his sort of, multiplicity of interest. But obviously, Steve started preparing for this, years ago. I mean, he made movies. He created a foundation. He has this soccer sort of We Are the World network,
mm-hmm,
that kind of operates. Steve is not going to go away. I think it will be different. Like, the one guy that's really made an impact staying in the public eye has been Magic Johnson, because he has so many businesses. I mean, Magic is a billion-dollar businessman. That's not going to be Steve. Not that Steve will be. I don't think we'll see him out starving for money.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he will make a difference. I could see him, for example, this is totally out of the blue, but I could see him being Canada's Olympic minister. I could see him being a guy, if he was interested,
mm-hmm,
I could see him somewhere in the world sports organization kind of trying to make a difference. Now, my guess is the titles are a little bit bureaucratic for Steve,
sure,
that, who doesn't like to show up at meetings in a suit. But I could see him impacting sort of whatever sport it would be. I mean, basketball and soccer being the most obvious. I could see him impacting that on kind of an international level, because he does have a gift in a quiet way. He's not a bull, a person to, slang around the bull, but he's very confident with his opinions. He knows he's smart. He knows he has a good mind. He knows he wants to stay involved. So I could definitely see him. He will not go away.
Jack, it was good to talk to you. Thanks so much. The book, I hope it does really well. As I said, the book and the Sun's a tremendous read. And thanks for joining us and talking about Steve Nash.
Okay, thank you.
It's Jack McCallum. He is the author of 7 Seconds or Less and Dream Team, 7 Seconds or Less, a book in the 2005-2006 Phoenix Suns. He followed them around for a season. A lot of stuff about Steve Nash in that book. And his new book is called Bleeding Orange, 50 Years of Blind Referees, Screaming Fans, Beast of the East, and Syracuse Basketball. And that is co-written with Syracuse Orange head coach Jim Boeheim. I didn't realize that Nash wanted to go to Syracuse. I didn't realize he was ever that open about it. That's kind of an interesting twist. And I could see Jim Boeheim saying, well, yeah, I missed on him. So did 149 other guys. And see, this is the thing. This is why Steve Nash is so important. You know what? That won't happen now. If there's another Steve Nash out there, there aren't going to be 149 coaches missing on him. There are going to be 147 coaches giving him a scholarship offer, and he's going to be choosing between them. And that's what I've been trying to get at with Steve Nash. Beyond what he's done as a player, beyond what he has done, as a philanthropist at the root level, at the ground level, he has raised the profile of the Canadian game, and as a result, the next Steve Nash isn't going to be a guy who has gone to Santa Clara. No disrespect to Santa Clara, but he isn't going to be a guy who's gone to Santa Clara or some school that's off the beaten path. He's going to be a guy who more than likely has had a choice between multiple big schools. That is the direct legacy of Steve Nash. That is why he has been such a transformative figure for Canadian sports. As I've said, the most transformative figure in my lifetime as far as Canadian athletes go. The Canadian national women's soccer team has a couple of friendlies this weekend and this week as they continue their preparation for the 2015 Women's World Cup, which will be held in Canada. The Canadian team is currently ranked 8th in the world. They will play number 3 Japan tomorrow in Edmonton. That game will be on Sportsnet Ontario at 4 p.m. Tuesday, they will play Japan again in Vancouver. And that game will be on 10 p.m. Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet World. The head coach of the Canadian National Women's Soccer Team is John Herdman. And John Herdman will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we are back. Hockey Central at noon is, by my guess, about 20 minutes away. That's my repertorial background. By the way, a little bit of a, breaking story. Boston Bruins general manager Peter Chiarelli has just informed the media that Zdeno Chara has suffered a tear in the posterior cruciate ligament in his left knee. As expected, he'll be out 4 to 6 weeks. So there you go. It is a torn knee ligament for Zdeno Chara. And since he's 6'9", I've got to think that's one hell of a long knee ligament. The Canadian women's soccer team continues its preparations for the 2015 Women's World Cup. A pair of very intriguing friendlies tomorrow in Edmonton at 4 o'clock on Sportsnet Ontario against number 3 ranked Japan. Canada's ranked number 8. And Tuesday, the two teams will meet again in Vancouver at 10 p.m. on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet World. The head coach of the Canadian National Women's Soccer Team is John Herdman. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach Herdman. And John Herdman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. John, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today.
No problem, Jeff. I was just laughing at your knee ligament thing because I'm like 5 foot five or something. My knee ligament's probably about half a centimeter.
I wouldn't mean to make fun of it, but I figure a guy who's 6'9", that's got to be one hell of a long knee ligament. I mean, maybe it isn't. Yeah. Maybe they're all the same size. I don't know. I'm not a physiologist.
Anyway, look, I'll probably come up to his knees anyway. So, wow.
So you've got. I wanted to ask you this because I mean, teams do play friendlies, obviously, but I've got to think for a coach having friendlies against the same team, a team that's very good, a team that plays a good style of soccer. Having a couple of friendlies so close together, is that a particularly important part of preparation for you? Because not only will it allow you to get ready for a match, but you'll also have a quick turnaround to maybe make adjustments against the same team soon after. It would seem to me that gives you a chance to maybe try a lot of things and to get kind of a read of how that'll work.
Look, you're right on it, Jeff. I mean, you can take my job because you're all over it. It's exactly that. As part of the World Cup, there are some really tight turnarounds at certain times in the tournament. And you go from back-to-back games against what we would call Tier 1 teams, those podium threats like Japan. So in terms of our internal processes, we have to look at that. And being in Canada, you get a chance to see, look, we're moving from this city to this city. These are the little details on the recovery and regeneration strategies we have to get right. And at the same time, it's practicing those processes of what did you learn from the first game and how quick can you transfer those learnings through your environment to then impact the second game. So, I mean, there are definitely some things and reasons why we've brought Japan to Canada, to play in Canada in close proximity. But on the other side, look, you're playing against the current world champions, Olympic silver medalists. So there's a lot of learning that will go on from the game because if you're going to win a World Cup in Canada, you're probably going to have to play Japan at some point.
John, how much... looking ahead a little bit to 2015, how much will you and your staff know about your opposition? Will there be some advanced scouting? Will it be largely video work? How do you ensure that when you come up against an opponent, there isn't that, you know, that surprise that nobody saw coming? Or can you do that?
Look, I think a lot of top-class coaches will keep the cards close to their chest with certain tactics that they'll hold off until the tournament. They'll want to go in there with a bit of a surprise, whether it's in set pieces or some of the adjustments they make in the game with personnel. But I think the reality is we plan to say, look, no stone left unturned. We have to play every one of those podium threat teams. Like, you know, it's either USA, Germany, Japan, Brazil, France, Sweden. Those are the teams that are going to end up on the podium. That's what the research and history will tell you. So you have to play them. And we've planned to do that over this period of time. Already we've had the USA twice this year. We've had Germany twice in the last 2 years. We'll take Japan twice now. So every time we play them, we gather Prozone data, we gather sports code data, we have GPS data on how much they run in comparison to our players. We pretty much get down to the minutiae in trying to find those little details that can make a difference in our preparation. So, you know, in the advanced scouting, every one of my technical staff has a project. I look after six teams that I constantly have to keep updating our tactical blueprints on, and that's part of our process to be successful. I mean, look, the Canadian team, we've got a great team, but at the end of the day, you know, we do lack a couple of those star players that some of the top teams have, and it has to be a real team performance, both on and off the pitch, if we're going to win a medal.
How set are you in your lineup right now? And I know, again, we're looking way ahead to 2015, but do you have a pretty good idea right now of what your 11 will be for that first match?
Look, I think as a coach, you always have the end in mind, and you look at the final game, you look at the first game, so you do keep that in mind. And when you've seen my selections, there is a consistent spine that seems to turn up, you know, in every single game against the Tier 1 team. So you know, every team has a spine of those players that, you know, you can rely on, and they do have that star quality. And those players are pretty evident. And the players like Sinclair, you know, Matheson, McLeod, Schmidt, I mean, those are the players that Buchanan that we've consistently played with. So I think one of the main things we've been looking at, Jeff, is looking at that left side of defence. You know, we've really been trying to find a naturally left-footed fullback, and as well as, you know, looking for those players, young players that have got the that little bit of star quality that, you know, we may be lacking in the team. So I think over 3 years I've been working hard to, you know, look around and cast the net wide, but 8 months out from a World Cup, we're getting so close now to knowing who that squad's going to be.
As we get closer to the World Cup, will you change how you manage the actual matches, you know, as we get closer? Will you put more of an emphasis and urgency? That probably doesn't sound right, but I think you know what I mean. As we get closer, the friendlies that get closer to the start of the World Cup, will you manage them differently, or are you the type of person that, you know, you've got goals, you've got things you need to get done, you've got things you need to see, and then once the World Cup starts, you take all that information you've gathered from that process and apply it to the match at hand?
Yeah, look, I mean, rightly or wrongly, we're very process-orientated in our approach. We've had a quadrennial plan, a four-year plan, right through to the Olympics, and we've moved tactically through three stages, a learn, improve and perfect, and by the time we get to the World Cup, we're in a perfect phase, and that piece is about starting to apply tournament strategies. The things that trip teams up in a World Cup, like going down to 10 men and not being organised for that, going against 10 men and not being organised, about playing when you're a goal up or a goal down in a game, about going into extra time and some of the strategies you have to manipulate and heat, etc. So that's where we start to shift towards the end of our preparation. At this stage, we're really focused on getting our own template together in terms of our tactical blueprint and how we play and how that adapts to certain opposition teams. But closer to the tournament, you start really looking at those little details that often costs big teams in tournaments where you haven't done that sort of preparation. So, yeah, there is a shift, and it is planned. And, you know, sometimes that's a good way to be, very planned. In other ways, you know, you can be too structured. So who knows if it's right or wrong at this stage.
John Herdman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Without giving any secrets away, is there a country out there, a team out there that you have noticed in the past year or 2 years is starting to make a move up the ladder and might be a bit of a surprise in this tournament, or is it sort of going to be the usual podium contenders?
Yeah, it's going to be the usual. You know, I can't see past France, Brazil, USA, Sweden, Japan, Germany. I mean, mm-hmm. those five teams are the real teams that you have to look out for. But I think England are definitely a team that's starting to step through now. The new coach who brought in a lot of new faces, and they just seem to be on a good rise. They, you know, they're unbeaten under the coach, and you know, they beat Sweden 4-0 in a recent fixture. So if any team I think are going to be the dark horse there, that's the one I'm looking for with England.
John, listen, it was really good of you to join us this morning. I know it's getting hectic. We're getting close to the World Cup. You've got those two friendlies. Best of luck, and we'll do this again.
Thanks again, Jeff. Always a pleasure.
Take care. That is John Herdman. He is the head coach of Canada's national women's soccer team. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach Herdman. And again, big weekend. These are going to be two really entertaining matches, having seen these teams play. Japan is a third-ranked team in the world. They'll take on Canada tomorrow in Edmonton. That's at 4 p.m. on Sportsnet Ontario. Tuesday in Vancouver, 10 p.m. on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet World. Women's soccer, Canada and Japan is, you know, we always talk about, we associate Canada and the U.S., and that's a big rivalry. But you are absolutely, absolutely going to love watching the Japanese play. And this is a really, really, really good matchup. If you're in Edmonton, you're listening online, Vancouver listening online, get out there, support the women. And if you're not in Vancouver, Edmonton, again, 4 p.m. Saturday, Sportsnet Ontario, Tuesday, 10 p.m. from Vancouver on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet World. That is it for the Jeff Blair Show for this week. And it's not been the usual week, has it? Hope everybody has a great weekend. Stay healthy. Be well. Spend as much time as you possibly can with your family this weekend. Watch some soccer. Watch some baseball. By all means, watch hockey. Hockey Central at noon is next. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.